What is going on, everybody? It's me, John Middlecoff. This is the Three and Out Podcast. Coming at you from my guy Colin Coward's Podcast Network. Appreciate everyone listening. I'm recording this. This is about a, as I press play, about an hour before the Hall of Fame game. You know, I can't take the Hall of Fame game that seriously. I honestly didn't even realize this was Hall of Fame weekend. It kind of crept up on me. I mean, I knew it was coming, and maybe it's because I don't really love this Hall of Fame class. I think we've diluted it a little the last 3 or 4 years. You know, Kevin Mawai, Ty Law, to me, they fall much closer under the umbrella of Hall of Really Good. I mean, really good players, but, you know, when I think Hall of Fame, I think Deion Sanders, I think Jerry Rice, I think Lawrence Taylor, you know, Kevin Mawai, again, good play, like Tony Gonzalez, first ballot Hall of Famer, or not first ballot, or maybe he was, but Tony Gonzalez, a Hall of Famer. But that's, I'm not going to talk much about the Hall of Fame, at least this class. I'm not going to talk about the game, at least that's the plan of right now. But we're going to dive into the running backs, because we got a couple guys. We got Zeke in Cabo San Lucas or Cancun or wherever the hell he is down in Mexico doing who knows what. Training. As Rap Sheet said, he's training with other NFL players. No, Ian, he's training with former NFL players, if anything, because actual NFL players are at training camp. But Melvin Gordon officially asked for a trade. That's a problem. We'll talk about that. Andrew Luck injured again. I got some just concerns just about his long-term future, and I'm an Andrew Luck guy. You know, there's never been a better time right now in football history to be a wide receiver. I think Michael Thomas showed us that. And then the official top 10 for, I think, the AP, USA Today, not exactly. I just saw a top 10 list, or maybe top 25 list for college football. Clemson number one, and I think, you know, most of you already know this, but I don't think we quite come to grips yet what we're witnessing with Dabo Swinney and the Clemson football program. But I was thinking about this today. There's obviously a lot of you hit me up, and we'll end the show with the Middlecoff mailbag. At John Middlecoff is my Instagram handle. I always do a segment at the end, Middlecoff mailbag, answer your questions. I got a bunch of new questions. I've answered a bunch. It's where I interact and hang out with you guys. Slide up into my direct messages, and we'll bullshit about football, whatever you want to talk about. But I answer football questions here on the show. But I wanted to start with this because this has been truly the hottest topic, at least today, definitely, is that it became official today that Melvin Gordon asked for a trade. He wants a trade. My first response, to who for what? To quote my guy Ricky Waters, I just think Melvin Gordon has no leverage. And I think it's pretty simple. You hear this all the time, I'm sure in your business, whatever you do, in the business of football. Life's all about leverage. For 18 years of my life, like most people growing up, you have no leverage. Your parents control everything you do. You're dependent on them to eat, to sleep, to do everything. Or whoever you're growing up with. If you didn't have parents, maybe your grandparents, your uncle, your aunt, whatever. Whoever you live with growing up, they control your life. Then you go to college, and if you do well in school, and you have some high accolades coming out, whether you're an athlete or whether you're a student, maybe some people start coming for you. Maybe you got a little leverage. Like Melvin Gordon had a little leverage when he was coming out of Wisconsin. He was a really good player. He became a top 15 pick. He was, his first year, he was borderline royal bust. But then, in a short period of time, in his given profession, his position lost a ton of leverage because it's been, you know, dramatically devalued. We devalue the running back. Right? It's just a fact. Because it's the easiest position to replace. In any business, if your value at something, you're going to be more valuable if whatever you do, that position is harder to replace. I think we all can relate. In whatever, you know, industry you work in, the IT guy has some leverage over every human, right? Because you need that guy. If your computer breaks, if your phone messes up, there's nothing you can do. Like most of us, even if those of us that have grown up in the world of technology, we kind of know the basic levels of stuff, but we are dependent on the IT guy to fix our shit because we can't function without a computer. Kind of like the NFL. I can't function without a quarterback. I can't function without a pass rusher. I can't function without some good wide receivers. But I sure as hell can function without a good running back because it's the one position that is replaceable. Here's my problem with Melvin Gordon. Twofold. One, I want to trade. To who? Like, Melvin, you are holding out right now. So if someone trades for you, one, no one's trading a first-round pick, obviously, and I used a first-round pick on you. Okay, maybe I'd trade you for a second-round pick. No team in the league is trading for a second-round pick for Melvin Gordon. That's a 100%. That's not an opinion. That's a fact. Maybe a third-round pick, but if I'm the Chargers, like, I'm not giving up Melvin Gordon for a third-round pick. But even if you were a team willing, let's say, to give up a third-round pick, and let's say the Chargers were like, yeah, we'll give him away for a third-round pick, which they wouldn't, you would then have to pay him. And the Chargers are offering him a contract, which I think you could argue is bad business. I would not offer him this. But they are somewhat emotionally tied. They drafted him in the first round. They like the guy. They just want him around. I mean, he's a key part to what they do, even though it's proven that when he's out, Eckler and just they can patchwork together like most running backs. And it's pretty clear there's an elite tier of guys, and Melvin Gordon ain't in it. I got news for you. So when they're offering you $9.5 million a year, I don't know who's giving you advice, whether you believe you're worth more, whether your greedy little agent's telling you you're worth more, whether your friends from home are telling you you're worth more, you're not. So you should run to the Chargers facility right now and sign that contract. And you can ask for a trade all you want, but here's the problem. No team is trading a high-level asset for you and then using that after they've used that to pay you. Like Khalil Mack, he had a ton of leverage, and I completely supported his holdout. He knew he was worth a shitload of money, and every team in the league was lined up to do two things. Trade a lot, and then pay him a huge contract. Because when you trade for a player on a holdout, well, once you trade for him, he doesn't just show up for you. He still has the same needs. Melvin Gordon's needs would not have changed once he was traded. He would still want to be paid. So teams know that. He's not showing up for them. That's a problem for Clowney right now. I talked about this a couple weeks ago. Not all holdouts are equal. Because guess what? Michael Thomas for the New Orleans Saints, and we'll get to him a little later today. If he continued to hold out and said, I'm not coming, let's say the Saints refused to offer him a big contract, there would be a lot of teams in the league that would have no problem probably trading good teams. You know, you don't think the Patriots would trade next year's first for Michael Thomas and then pay him? They probably would. Maybe the Green Bay Packers. I mean, there would be teams. The 49ers, there would be teams. And then they would pay him what he just got. Michael Thomas had leverage. Khalil Mack had leverage. Aaron Donald has leverage. Jadeveon Clowney, a little bit of a problem. Because a team might be willing, let's say, to trade a second-round pick for Clowney, but they're not going to pay him what he wants. And that's the problem with these guys holding out. Like, no one's trading for you, Melvin, of anything of value that would make it worth the Chargers to trade you. So that's not an option. They're offering you a contract. This victimhood of the running backs are playing, I understand why certain players, hate the analytical movement. Because the analytical movement is basically saying one of the most highly valued positions in the history of football, the running back, is kind of worthless right now. Now, if he can really catch the ball like Christian McCaffrey or Alvin Kamara, they're not as worthless, but Melvin Gordon is not those guys. Plus, he is often injured. And I think he's struggling to come to grips with, yeah, I'm kind of closer to the middle tier than I am the top tier. They're offering me money, even though I think I'm worth more, but I'm not worth more. Because the market is the market. We just saw a player who is dramatically better than Melvin Gordon hit free agency this offseason, off a year where he's completely fresh in Le'Veon Bell. And the best offer by a mile from my sources, and I have a source that was in on the negotiations, because they almost signed him, Team X, because he was going to come so cheap. Le'Veon Bell, who is dramatically better than Melvin Gordon. Now, some question marks off the field, has been in trouble. Melvin never has. I think that's one of the positive things Melvin has going for him. Good teammate, likable guy, no trouble. The only really red flag are injuries. But Le'Veon Bell, every single person in the NFL, including the Chargers, would rather have Le'Veon Bell than Melvin Gordon. Well, we saw one guy hit the open market where every team in the league, and there was a historic amount of free agent money. I think there was $3 billion worth of money to spend. And the most money, again, by a mile that he was offered, is what Mike Maccagnan, who then was later fired for it, offered him basically $27 million guaranteed. And I think everyone listening to this I know a lot of NFL people listen to this. We all know Le'Veon Bell is much better than Melvin Gordon. He got $27 million. So basically, from what I've heard, are the Chargers are offering him, give or take, with incentives and stuff, like $9.5 to $10 million, and basically in the low 20s of guaranteed money. Melvin, I'm telling you, run to the facility and sign that contract. Don't be an idiot. Don't let your friends who act like you're getting screwed, you're not getting screwed. And I tweeted this earlier today, and a lot of people freaked out. You know what's funny is agents and players love to do when they feel they're getting screwed, they hold out. What happened year one when Melvin Gordon was one of the biggest busts in the league, was god-awful, and the moment they signed him, they gave him $7 million? You think Melvin Gordon and his agent ever thought about giving that money back? Like, hey, sorry guys, we underachieved this year, we'll give you $1 million back. Hell no. So it's not a two-way street, and people always forget the players are always getting screwed. Someone was arguing to me on Twitter today. Dean Spanos, and listen, I think Dean Spanos is a clown. He's never met a dollar that he doesn't want to save. I think he's an embarrassment to rich people and an embarrassment to the state of California. I'm not a Dean Spanos fan. But Dean Spanos is worth $2.5 billion, and Melvin Gordon can't get a little bit? Yeah, just because a guy's worth $2.5 million, does that mean he should pay every single player that he has on his team? Because I think we all acknowledge, I would say this. I'd argue that even offering Melvin Gordon this contract is dumb business. I'd make him play on the contract he's on. Because again, we have facts. He's a replaceable player. They didn't skip a beat when he wasn't in the game. They did skip a beat when Keenan Allen's not around. When Bosa and Ingram get hurt, they'd be in trouble. Melvin Gordon's not in? Whatever. We can replace it. I sure as hell know I can replace Melvin Gordon at $10 million. Because I can get a running back for $1 million and then get a couple, an undrafted free agent and claim a guy. And at worst, I'd put 85% of his production together for, I don't know, an eighth of the price? Like, this is a business. You can't just pay everyone, especially, you know, solid players that play a replaceable position. You know what the Chargers did? They'll pay Rivers. They'll pay Keenan Allen. They'll pay Bosa and Ingram. They got no problem doing that. Now, I mean, they do, because Dean Spanos doesn't like paying anybody. But they paid those guys. That's just a fact. So this notion that, trade me! No one's trading for you, Melvin. Any pick of value that would make them trade you. Two, that team, if they did trade for you, is not going to give you some contract that's going to make you super happy. I'm sorry, you have no leverage. So when you have no leverage in life, like, Dad, I'm leaving the house! It's easy to say that when you're 15, and then you walk out of the house. I remember I did that when I got in some knockdown, drag-out arguments. You walk down the street and you realize, I got no money, I got nowhere to go, and I'm kind of hungry. So you walk back to the house. I'll promise you, Melvin, you got to swallow your ego, swallow your pride, go sign this contract they're offering you, because I got news for you. The contract they're offering you is kind of dumb on their part. You're winning. You're not worth $10 million. And they're willing to pay that to you. Anytime someone's willing to pay you more money than you're worth, but just because your ego, and as men, we get all up in our feelings, like, I'm worth more. Just take a deep breath, swallow your pride, go sign the contract. They're not going to trade you. No one's trading for you and then paying for you. So please, Melvin, I'm rooting for you to get some more money. Go sign the contract before they yank it, because the contract they have on the table is a dumb one on their part. Okay, let's get into Michael Thomas, who just signed. Don't buy the fake news. It's not the richest wide receiver contract ever, because Odell Beckham got more guaranteed money. I don't care as much about the fluff, like your average per year. I care about real dollars. Odell Beckham, $65 million. Michael Thomas, $61 million. Bottom line, though, 5 years, $100 million. He got a lot of cash. And one thing is clear. There has never been a better time in NFL history to be a wide receiver. Just like what I'm doing right now, there's never been a better time to try to get into the media. How I'm doing this podcast, I'm doing it because of Colin Cowherd. I met him because of Twitter. People often ask me, like, how'd you get linked up with Colin? I just met him through Twitter, started DMing, became buddies. I mean, this was 20 years ago, it wouldn't have been possible. Like, there's never been a better time to be a video game player. The dude that won the Fortnite championship, I think, just got $3 million. Certain things in life is all about timing. And if you were a running back, you could cash in 20 years ago. If you were a video game player, you could not cash in 20 years ago. You sure as hell can cash in now. Ninja's crushing it. Just like Michael Thomas is crushing it. There's never been a better time to be a wide receiver. We talk about leverage. Wide receivers have little, running backs have little. Wide receivers sure as hell have a lot. And Michael Thomas had the Saints by the balls. And one thing's clear is the hierarchy of the way you build teams. And I said it last week, three positions are really, really important. The quarterback's been on the pedestal now for a long time. The pass rusher now has been on the pedestal for a long time. But I think the wide receiver has taken a lot of the juice away from the running back. Because the wide receiver, the way the game is officiated, how easy it is for the top wide receivers to dominate in the league, it's pretty clear that these top guys, and Texan with a guy in the league, there's never been a better time financially for a wide receiver. There's a group of guys, Julio Jones, he ain't playing tonight, but the Falcons tweeted out a video of him making this incredible jump one-hand catch. It was awesome. He's a freak. Whenever his new contract happens, it's going to be enormous. If Tyreek Hill can avoid the police for like 10 minutes, he is going to get so much damn money, it's stupid. He's an uncoverable player in 2019. Now, maybe you couldn't cover him in the 70s or 80s either, but you could at least mug him back then. I can't even touch the guy anymore. Think about that. Think about Odell Beckham Jr. got $65 million. And I love Odell Beckham Jr., but it was more really on hype and potential than it was off production. Because he had been hurt. He hadn't been producing when he got the contract. Now, don't get me wrong. I think he's worth the money. But the talent, Mike Evans is, you know, he got paid recently, I think last year. He's worth every penny. These guys, you can't cover the player. And when you look at the league, to me, it's all about how you're building your team financially. Because it has changed dramatically the last 3 or 4 years. Quarterback's been at the top of the hierarchy for a long time. I think forever, it was build your team inside out. Here's what I know for a fact. To win big in this league, you need good wide receivers. And you'd be like, oh, the Patriots. Yeah, I mean, they had Gronk. And Edelman's one of the greatest slot receivers we've ever seen in a big game. And Tom Brady. They're, to me, somewhat of an outlier. When you consistently look at the teams that dominate in the playoffs, they get a lot of production from their wide receiver. And when you have a star wide receiver, unlike when you have a star running back, you have no choice but to pay them. Remember, it wasn't that long ago, you would get rid of guys like Terrell Owens. Even Antonio Brown, who's kind of been a pain in the Steelers' ass for a couple years, they eventually just, like, they paid him multiple times before they just kind of had enough. But they realized how valuable he was. And they moved on from constant receivers over the years. Think about all the guys over the last 15 years the Steelers moved on for. He was the one guy that they kept for multiple contracts. Because the rules and the game dictate it. And I think you're only going to see one thing. The other, Bill Parcells, I think, it might have been another coach, always said, you really can only build your team around what college football gives you. Well, college football now is giving you all these wide receivers. Think about it. It's not giving you as many offensive linemen anymore. The running backs, the league doesn't value it anymore. The corners are very hit or miss. But every year, we're getting several top-notch wide receivers in the league. Hey, kids, play wide receiver. Because my other big theory and the way I'd build a team financially, I wouldn't pay cornerbacks big money anymore either. And they used to be always a position that you'd have no problem giving, you know, relative to the money now, probably $12, $13, $14 million a year. I wouldn't pay a corner. I wouldn't pay Jalen Ramsey $14 million a year. Not saying that he's not worth that as a player. He's one of the best corners in the league. I don't want high-priced corners. I'd rather have three or four guys not making that much money. Why? Because my corners, they're going to get beat no matter what. Like I said on Monday about building your team, I'm paying defensive linemen. I'd rather allocate that money for defensive linemen, wide receivers to go along with my quarterback, and a couple offensive linemen. I'll patchwork my cornerbacks. I'll pay a safety. I'll go pay Honey Badger or Earl Thomas. I'm not doing that with Jalen. Because if I'm the Jaguars and I got Nick Foles, I'd rather have a top-notch wide receiver right now than Jalen Ramsey. I just would, especially if I'm already paying another cornerback in A.J. Bouye a lot of money. I'd go pay a safety. So the things just dramatically change. And maybe it's cyclical. Maybe it's not. Because if the rules keep going the way they have been going for the last several years, it's only going to dictate the fact that it's easier for wide receivers to dominate. And it's even harder for corners to play well. And running backs become more devalued. Again, a big reason this is happening is because of the rules. But forever it was like, you paid your quarterback, which will never change. You pay your pass rusher, which will never change. And, you know, you wouldn't necessarily pay a wide receiver. And that was always a big rant for Colin. Like, wide receivers, dime a dozen or whatever. I don't think they are anymore, especially when you have a top guy. Because you see it every year now. I mean, look, these teams, when you have a top flight wide receiver, he's unstoppable. And especially the Saints, who were in a position where he was really their only good wide receiver. Felt like they target him 12 times a game. He kind of had him by the balls, just like Julio's got the Falcons. Well, not as much because they drafted Calvin Ridley. They might be a good player. Maybe he's replaceable. But that would be betting on the fact that Calvin Ridley's going to be a star. The Packers, who got a really good deal with Davante Adams, they need Davante Adams. It's when I'm at 49er practice, I go, I think the biggest issue is here, I don't know the guy that they can just hang their hat on at the end of the day when it's 3rd and 7 that I know I can go to. You can tell me all you want about the Patriots not having a star wide receiver the last 10 years. They've had Gronkowski, who was paid a premium because at the end of the day, he was an unstoppable force in the passing game. And that's what you have to be in 2019. But you didn't have to be that in 1993, in 1984, hell, in 2007. Nowadays, because I remember when I was in Philly, it was like, should we pay DeSean Jackson? Should we not? If you had a young DeSean Jackson on your team, even if he was a little bit of a pain, in 2019, you wouldn't even think twice about it. He would get the money that he wanted. And, you know, you could argue he was just 3 or 4 years early. I mean, it's like the three-point shot in basketball. Think of his value now, when you really can't touch him. It would be a wrap. And I think Michael Thomas and all these wide receivers coming up the pipe are just a great example. The Juju's, all the young guys that have infiltrated this league the last 2 or 3 years, of just the game changing at a perfect time for them to cash in economically. Okay, let's get into Andrew Luck. And the Hall of Fame game has started behind me, and I saw Fangio is... He has a kidney stone, and he's coaching through it. And I remember my dad, when I was growing up, maybe had a couple, but definitely I remember the one. He was bedridden for a couple days in so much pain trying to pass the thing. And they just said, Fangio's on a couple wonder drops. Who knows what PEDs he's on? A great part of it being a coach, you can take PEDs to make the pain go away. But I also think, and I say this all the time, any industry you're in, whether it's football, whether it's talking for a living, like a lot of people are on PEDs in some form or fashion, whether it's CBD, whether it's Adderall, whether it's something. I mean, everyone in every profession is looking for an edge. Like, most people don't naturally have a ton of energy the older they get. But if you think about it, like your competition, you might be going up against this 55-year-old with a ton of energy. Yeah, he's probably on something, you know, his doctor prescribed, or maybe just sucking down 10 cups of coffee. He's doing something to gain an edge. They always are. And in football, there's never been an easier time for quarterbacks to gain an edge in terms of playing into their latter years. Now, it's pretty normal for a quarterback to play. Like, it feels like kind of Aaron Rodgers is young. Aaron Rodgers is 35 years old. You know, back in the day, his career would be over. I mean, it feels like Aaron Rodgers got 3 or 4 really good years left. He's going to probably play till he's 40. Drew Brees is 40. I mean, Brady's the all-time outlier, 42. Peyton Manning overcame that crazy neck surgery and basically played till he was 38, 39 years old. Like, quarterbacks don't leave this league at 35 years old anymore. They play until they're 40. Hell, Eli Manning hasn't even been good for a while, and he's still cranking along at 36 years old. Cranking along would be strong, but you get my drift. Now, when you look at the younger quarterbacks, there's like this middle ground of guys, right? Because there's the young quarterbacks, the Mahomes, the Watsons, the Bakers, that whole crew. Then there's just middle crew, and it's really kind of 3 standouts, in my opinion. Luck, Russell Wilson, and Cam. And I'm not that confident that any of them are going to get to 40. Now, Cam Newton, I would definitely bet against because he's already had a ton of injuries. And just the physical nature that he plays, he feels like a 35-year-old that's actually 30. Russell, who somehow has never missed a game in his career. I looked it up the other day. I forget the exact number. It was like 112 for 112. You just go across his you know, NFL.com page, 16 for 16, all 7 years. The dude is just an Ironman. Andrew Luck is somewhat the opposite. He's much closer to Cam. If anything, he's been the most injured out of the three guys. He missed an entire season in 2007. Excuse me, 2017. Missed the entire season. And in 2015, he missed 7 games. And right now, it was reported a couple days ago that he has a calf injury. Now, on the surface, a calf injury isn't that big of a deal, right? Just a calf injury. You know, it's August 1st. Who cares whether he practices or not? And yeah, at the end of the day, I don't really. But the one thing that concerns me is because, and it's not his fault, and he actually has become a smarter player, but the team that Ryan Grigson gave him and continued to build around him almost got him killed. We know that, and that cost Ryan Grigson his job, and he'll never be a GM in the league again. But Andrew Luck, I hope, and I think he's the best of that group, of the Cam Newton, of the Russell Wilson group. And what's crazy is you could argue he's accomplished the least, right? Russell's won a Super Bowl as a starting quarterback. Now, he was nowhere near as good as he was now, but he's Super Bowl champion, and he's been to another. Granted, he threw the pick at the goal line, but you know what I'm saying. Cam Newton, league MVP, led a team to the Super Bowl. Now, granted, I profited because I bet the house against him, and I won a lot of money off the Denver Broncos. But MVP, been to Super Bowl. Andrew Luck hasn't. Farthest he got was the AFC Championship game with a terrible team. I mean, those guys have played on good teams. His teams, how they made it to the conference championship his third year in the league is beyond me. But he's had serious injuries, and he consistently gets injured. I am just nervous that the trajectory of his career, how does he make it even close to 40 years old? I'm not even confident that he'll still be humming at 35. It just feels like it's always something with the guy. And again, I don't totally blame him. He got destroyed his first couple years because his offensive line was basically me, you, and three other guys. I mean, it was terrible. It couldn't have been any worse. But just the style that he plays, maybe it's just his body type. And I don't mean actual his physical stature because he's everything you look for, right? He's 6'5", he's 235 pounds, he's built like a linebacker. But for whatever reason, maybe his bone density, I'm not a doctor, I don't quite understand these things, why Russell Wilson hasn't missed a game, and this guy's missed all these games. They both played a terrible offensive line. It doesn't quite make sense, but I know the one thing that does make sense. If you were treating Andrew Luck like a stock, and you said, will he still be a starting quarterback at 38? When I say starting quarterback, like, will he still be in the league at 38? He'll be 30 here in a month. I would bet no. I would say the number where I would feel confident going over would be 34. Any number over that, I would be a little apprehensive. I would not be confident in taking the over. Now, doesn't mean I'm going to be right, but it's just, it's always a nick. It's always a bruise. It's been major injuries. Hell, it was the snowboarding accident. Whatever it was, it's kind of always something with Andrew Luck. So if you're a Colts fan, I would really, really try to enjoy these next couple years. Your team's equipped. Your GM's legit. Your coach seems good. Your window is now. Your window is 100. Like the Carolina Panthers window with Cam kind of being, might be a shot fighter. We'll see. It might already be over. Seattle's window feels like it's longer just because Russell more than likely is going to play just longer than those two guys. But if you're Indy, you probably need to win a Super Bowl in these next couple years if it's going to happen on the Andrew Luck watch. Because we've seen, it'll be a calf, then it'll be an arm, then it'll be an oblique, then his shoulder will go out again. You got to put all your chips to the middle of the table. And I give Chris Ballard credit. He's built a really good team. They're equipped to take advantage of it right now. I think they could be a legitimate Super Bowl contender this year. And next year, they probably should only be even better. But just the way this player has shown us that his durability is somewhat a question mark, you got to take advantage of it. I'm bullish on the Colts. I'd be shocked if they're not a 1 or 2 seed probably at the end of the day. When you look at the Chiefs, you know, I don't know if the Patriots are going to be quite as good. You know, I think the Colts could win 13 games, but the time is now, and we got to enjoy Andrew Luck when we have him because we might not have him for that much longer. Well, most people, I think, assume this is just an NFL podcast, and I got news for you. It's not. Now, I talk a lot of NFL because That's the cash cow, number one sport in America. But college football ain't far behind. I love college football. Big college football fan. For about 12 straight weeks in the fall, I consume it from sunup till sundown on Saturdays. Well after the sun's down, because the Pac-12 games go late into the night. And, you know, I'm always down to talk college football. Obviously, probably the NFL takes precedent on this show, and we got a little more going on. And I live on the West Coast, and the Pac-12's well down, but I love college football. And I think a lot of people, just in general, are somewhat down on it because they feel it's so top-heavy. It's kind of become like the NBA. Only two or three teams have a chance to win. And I think there's some validity to that, which is fair. Kind of feels somewhat like a two-team race, Alabama and Clemson. Now, I think Georgia's going to be really good this year. I think this is definitely the year for Michigan and Jim Harbaugh to get the job done. Ohio State is loaded. I just don't trust the coach. Oregon is somewhat of a wild card, but it can't be disputed. Their team's really talented. Washington's obviously good. But to me, when the top 25 came out today, I don't know if it's USA Today, AP poll, whatever, I don't even look at it past five, really, you know, because it's irrelevant. But one thing that's pretty clear is there's a new number one in town, and that's the Clemson Tigers. And I think it's bigger than that. I think there's a new big dog in college football, and that's Dabo Sweeney. With Urban Meyer retired, at least for the year, I think we all think he's going to be Fraud Meyer, as I like to call him, will be the head coach at USC next year. But when it comes to college football, there is one guy that can match with Urban gone. I'm not a fan of Urban off the field, but I've never disputed he was an elite coach and every bit of Nick Saban's equal. Well, once he fell off the map and left, there was, you know, it's like, who's going to be Nick Saban's equal? Well, it's pretty clear that Dabo Sweeney is his equal. And a wise man once told me, and this has always stuck with me, his name is Phil Savage. He now works for the New York Jets. When he was running the Senior Bowl, and, you know, I don't quite understand the Southern geography. All I know is you can drive everywhere. Like, he lived in Mobile, Alabama. He could drive to Florida State. He could drive to Atlanta. He could drive to Tennessee. He could just drive everywhere, and it wasn't that far. Well, he used to go when he was doing the Senior Bowl and when he was scouting, but definitely doing the Senior Bowl, to all the major schools down there. And obviously, he was working for Alabama, but he used to go to Florida State. And he would always tell me, and this is when Jimbo kind of got them rolling. He said the big advantage, and this was before Clemson took off, the big advantage Florida State has, and remember, when Jimbo won the national championship, that team with Jameis Winston was absolutely loaded with NFL players. He said they are recruiting an SEC player, but they play an ACC schedule. And once Jimbo, you know, some weird shit happened with his wife and an ex-Florida football player, and he kind of gave up on the program and left, Florida State fell off the map. Clemson has even taken it to a different level than Jimbo had it going at Florida State. He's won two of the three last national championships. He's 5-2 in the college football playoffs. But like Jimbo, and even maybe slightly better, he's recruiting an SEC player, and he's playing an ACC schedule, and he's kicking the living crap out of everyone. And I think you're looking at a guy, I did this a little research, when Nick Saban first won his national championship at LSU in 2003, he was over 50 years old. Dabo Sweeney is 49 years old and already has two national championships and a team that's heavily favored to win this year's. And they're going to be in the mix these next couple years because they have a sophomore quarterback who is viewed as a Peyton Manning, Andrew Luck level prospect. And I think we'd all agree he's pretty damn good. So for as much as, you know, we wish there was a little more parity in college football, and I do. I wish 15 teams have a shot. The reality, maybe five do, right? Clemson, Bama, probably on a level by themselves. Georgia, Ohio State, and maybe Michigan. It's probably maybe Oklahoma. I mean, it's maybe Texas. I mean, it's a very, very small group. But what Dabo is doing right now should be applauded. Because, you know what, in fairness to Dabo, like, Jimmy Johnson was kind of a dick. Nick kind of is an asshole. The one thing they say about Dabo, you know, he's pretty friendly. Everyone likes him. Now he's a coach, so he gets on guys. But he runs a family-oriented program. His players clearly really like him. And like Saban, he's an elite recruiter. And he's an elite recruiter in terms of getting NFL guys. Like even when Jimbo had Florida State humming, or He's going to turn around Texas A&M. One thing's clear, Jimbo's kind of an ass. Like, he's not the nicest guy to deal with. Dabo seems like a great guy. And he's a big-time football coach. His assistants like working for him. The players play hard for him. They're clearly really well-coached. He's highly compensated. Wikipedia said he makes over $9 million, worth every penny. 49 years old. His record is 116-30 at Clemson. Two natties, 5-2 in the college football playoffs. This guy is a winner at the highest level. This guy's trajectory, like, how does he not become Nick Saban of the sport? I don't see how he doesn't sustain it, because clearly his standards are sky high. He's probably arguably a little easier to play for than Nick in the sense that you're not getting yelled at maybe quite as much by him. And I don't see Clemson going away anytime soon. Now, the curveball in this entire thing is he's an Alabama graduate. He played football at Alabama. Nick Saban's 67 years old. Let's say he coaches till he's 70. Eventually, he's going to retire. Well, who's going to be Alabama's number one target? It's going to be Dabo Swinney. Now, with Clemson winning at such a high level, money's not an issue for them. Dabo's making $9-plus million. His defensive coordinator makes a couple million. Worth every penny, the money they generate for the school. I don't know if he takes the job or not. And, you know, they usually say the person to follow, you want to be the guy second to follow a Parcells, you know, or a Saban. You never want to be the first guy to do it. You want to wait for that guy to get fired and then follow him. But if you're Dabo, and home's home, you know, I don't know if, you know, at that point, it's not going to be about the money. I don't know if you had a chance to see The Athletic did an in-depth thing on Colin. It was like a 12-minute piece that, you know, like a real sports-type piece. The Athletic's doing that. And I actually got a chance to see Colin when I went down there in the during free agency. And the thing that stood out to me the most was I remember I was staying in like a shittier hotel 30 minutes away. I got up at 4:45. I didn't even beat him there. He was there at like 5:30 in the morning. Like, and Colin said on this Athletic piece, at this point in time in my life, I'm not doing this for the money. Like, Dabo Swinney, Nick Saban, they ain't doing it for the money. They've already made a ton of money. They've already had the accolades. Like, I'm a grinder because it's just woven in me. What deep down, something in me, it still watching Colin get ready for a show at what time they get there is, up at this point in time in my life, one of the most inspiring things I've ever seen professionally. Right? It's just how hard that guy grinds despite being at the highest level of his profession, the best talk show radio host in America, obviously the most famous, most powerful voice, and he grinds like he's a nobody. And that's always what they tell you about Belichick, Dabo, Nick. If he did want to follow Nick, Alabama would dominate. So I do think that's on the table, but at the end of the day, what we are witnessing is with Urban retiring, at least for now, Nick coming down the home stretch, this is the new Saban. This is the new Jimmy Johnson, Tom Osborne. Now, he has his own personality. And like as Matt Nagy writes on his play sheet, be you. He doesn't fake it. Like, you don't be an asshole if you're not an asshole, whether you're a coach or whether you're middle management. Just be yourself. Be yourself. Now, hold high standards. It's professional environment, whatever you're doing. But be you. And I give Dabo a lot of credit. He's him. Now, they win. And they win at a high level, and they benefit, like Phil says, they recruit an SEC player, and he recruits at the highest level. He goes right toe-to-toe with Alabama and Georgia, and he plays an easier schedule now that Florida State sucks, Miami sucks, Duke, whatever, Pitt. You know, the schedule's not that hard, but they take advantage of it. And you can't say that they're not on the level once they get there, because once they get to the college football playoffs, they dominate. We're witnessing a younger version of Saban here. This is what we're witnessing. It's happening in front of our eyes. So you can root for parity, and in a perfect world, I'd like it. But I also enjoy watching Dabo's team play. I like watching the joy and the fire that he gets out of coaching football. I'm a huge Dabo Swinney fan. And they're not going away anytime soon. The only question's going to be moving forward is, would he ever think about replacing Nick? And my gut, I don't know the guy, just watch him from afar. I would doubt that he does, because he could build a legendary, he could build Alabama. Hell, he has built Alabama at the University of Clemson. Let's dive into the Middlecoff mailbag. I got the Hall of Fame game on the background. Volume down, it just looks terrible. I mean, looks absolutely awful. Fangio, again, somehow coaching with a kidney stone. John, love the podcast and your insight. Quick question. I have coached JUCO ball in Kansas, Texas, and now I'm in East Mississippi. Whoa, season 1, 2 of Last Chance U. That's pretty cool. How does one get a job in scouting professionally? I know talent. I recruited the coach and coach guys like DeMarcus Lawrence, Michael Gallup, Chris Carson. God, you've recruited a lot of people. I always tell people that get involved in college football, you know, college recruiting. Clearly, you're already coaching the JC, so when these college coaches come through your JC, try to get just move up a program, or when they come through, especially if you're at now the JUCO in Mississippi, that you have big-time Division I prospects, whenever you get a coordinator or definitely a head coach, let them know that you want in. Let them know that if they want a recruiting, you know, a head of recruiting, you'd be interested. You know, sometimes you just got to ask. And the older I've gotten, now that I can basically run my own business, now it's different. And I understand when you're working for someone, you're always looking for another job, people get unsure. But as a wise man once told me, the only person that truly cares about you, you know, outside of your family, professionally, is you. So you got to worry about yourself first. Get involved in college football recruiting. Then if you can get to the right program, all the scouts come through that program, and then you can meet them. That's usually probably the best way to go. Okay. I'd be interested in your take on Daniel Jones. I've not read or heard anything positive from on the Giants picking this guy. Am I wishful thinking that he had a lot of drops at Duke and can count them as catches, that he's on the 70% accuracy? True. Thanks. Yeah, I mean, I'll be the first one to tell you that it's not like I was living and dying with Daniel Jones at Duke. I relied on my scouting buddies that had the SEC. And if I'm going to pick a positive thing to tell you, the one thing they all said was they liked him. He was liked in the scouting community. Now, number 6 overall pick liked? Of course not. But as a fringe first-round prospect, hell yeah. I got Drew Locke on my television, who went early in the second round of the Denver Broncos. I know a lot of people in the league that like Daniel Jones more than Drew Locke. Now, again, the Broncos got Drew Locke in the second round. The New York Giants and Dave Gettleman took Drew Locke as the 6th overall pick, which is pretty nuts. So I think Daniel Jones, the hardest thing for him to overcome is the instant negativity, is most fans have never had more information. Fans are you guys are the lifeblood of the sport. And now you're informed at levels that you never were in the past. You guys aren't dumb. Why everyone's so pissed is because they say, why would we take this guy at the 6th overall pick? Not necessarily that he's a scrub, that he wasn't worth the 6th overall pick. That's where all the anger comes from. So it's going to be hard for him to overcome that. It's hard in general to overcome just your draft status when you're drafted really high. You know, it puts a lot of unfair expectations on a lot of players. Now, it's easy when you're Mahomes or Khalil Mack or Odell Beckham Jr. But when you're a guy that probably should have been taken in the second round and you go in the top 10, even if you become a good player, it's hard to overcome that. I'm watching it. I have a front row seat with a couple guys here in the Bay Area. Solomon Thomas never should have been taken at pick 3. He may eventually become a better player than he's been, but he's never going to live up to the 3rd overall pick. Just like Colton Miller with the Raiders. No one thought Colton Miller with the Raiders was going to go in the first round. And then Gruden took him at 15. It's hard to overcome your draft round when it's really high. Do you think the Raiders can actually surprise some people? With the signings this offseason, the offense should be much more explosive. If it is a bust, who replaces Carr? Well, here's what I know about the Raiders. Their offense on paper is pretty good. You know, Derek has played well in this league. He's got to play better. If he does play better, though, they got a chance, because their offensive line is pretty good. Trent Brown's a monster. Rodney Hudson's a stud. Gabe Jackson's a good player. Richie Incognito's a nut job, but he's a good player. Colton Miller, question mark, but he should be better than he was last year. Offensive weapons, you go, well, Antonio Brown's a superstar. His feet are peeling off right now because I think he worked too hard, but Antonio Brown's elite. Tyrell Williams is a really good second receiver. It's Hunter Renfrow, Ryan Grant, they got some guys to throw in the slot. They drafted some tight ends. They have a first-round running back in Joshua Jacobs. Yeah, I mean, I think their offense should be pretty good. Their problem is their defense. Their defensive line on paper might be the worst in the NFL. And honestly, it might not be that close. It could be horrendous this year. Their linebackers are a pretty big question mark, too. Now, their secondary should be solid. Garon Conley's a good player. LaMarcus Joyner's a good player. They drafted Jonathan Abram in the first round. They drafted a corner in the second round from Clemson. So, yeah, I mean, I think they should be better than some people think. But surprise, when you can't rush the passer at all, you're going to be in trouble. So that would mean their offense would have to be a top 5 or 6 offense in the league for them to be around 8-8. Now, that's a lot of pressure on Derek and Gruden. Is there any real reason that, as a Colts fan, I should be concerned about Andrew Luck being held out? Are we looking at a Kevin Durant-type risk? I talked about it earlier. Short term, I don't think you should be concerned at all. I would just say big term. It's just, why does he get nicked up so much? Some of that, it's just his style. Because the Kevin Durant thing, I wasn't there at practice. No one seen video on Andrew Luck's calf injury. When Kevin Durant had his calf injury, it sure looked like he tore his Achilles the first time against the Houston Rockets in the second round. That's why when he came back and ended up tearing his Achilles, it was almost like he partially tore his Achilles the first time. Where Andrew Luck, it's just so much unknown. I would just be worried, though, big picture. Like, why can't the guy stay healthy? I just wanted to see what your thoughts about the Cowboys signing Alfred Morris, given the timing right after Jerry said they can win rings without Zeke. Listen, I think it's... Jerry's going to want Zeke around. He's one of their best players. Jerry drafted him. Jerry likes him. I think it's more... When a guy is injured or holding out, you still need to practice. You need players to play in preseason games, to take practice reps. Well, it's much easier once you're a week into training camp to sign a veteran guy that knows your offense, i.e. Alfred Morris, who was in this offense a couple years ago when Zeke was suspended, than sign some random undrafted free agent off the street. So I wouldn't put that much stock into them signing Alfred Morris, more just the simple fact you just need bodies. Now, Alfred Morris has proven he can function in this league. Question looks like was cut off there. I don't even know what the guy was asking. You talked about Monday about the diminishing value of cornerbacks. Would you pay big money for a safety like Eddie Jackson? I think safeties are much more valued than corners. So I'd say yes. Eddie Jackson is a turnover machine, and he plays in the middle of the field. So I think he has more value than either one of those corners. If you had to pick one defensive back on the Bears to keep, I don't even think you'd hesitate. You'd pick Eddie Jackson. So, yeah, I mean, I'd have no problem paying Eddie Jackson. If I had to part with one, I'd say see you to Fuller, and I'd keep Eddie Jackson if it was between one of those two players. Thanks for making a few days of sitting around the office a lot more enjoyable. It makes a difference. Sincerely, a sad Redskins fan. Thanks, bro. No question, just, you know, propping up my ego. Hello, John. In your latest podcast, you talk about corners and secondaries not really mattering anymore. But why are smart-ass teams like the Patriots investing so much in Gilmore and nothing into the D-line? That's a great question, because someone hit me up and I took a screenshot because I knew I wanted to find it once we started talking about it. That the Patriots, listen, Belichick's the best in the business, but this Porter Collins 5 DM'd me and said, I want to support your claim with the NFL secondaries that have been devalued. The Saints, Eagles, and Chiefs ranked 29th, 30th, and 31st in total defense, in total passing defense last year. And the Patriots, despite having a really good defensive back unit, ranked 22nd. Now, the Patriots play good red zone defense, one, and for whatever reason, I don't understand why Belichick discounts the defensive line so much. I just think the Patriots are somewhat of an outlier. They don't build their team normally, and they make up for it because Belichick is the greatest coach ever, and Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback ever. But Gilmore's a really good player. He's an all-pro level player. He's worth the money. McCourty's really good. Their linebackers are a little hit or miss, and their defensive line's clearly going to be worse with Trey Flowers being gone. What do you think of Dallas moving off of Dak? I can't help but feel he's a slightly better version of Tebow. Let me stop you right there. He's much better player than Tebow. I've had this idea, kind of, this is sad. I mean, this is the type of stuff I think about, but why don't the Cowboys do this? Dak Prescott, you're not getting $30 million a year. What if I offered you 4 years, $85 million, so 21 a year, the entire contract is guaranteed, basically like Kirk Cousins? Why wouldn't he take that? Especially if I go, Dak, I'll give you 4 years, $85 million, every penny's guaranteed, like an NBA contract. And also, you saving me that $20-plus million overall, I'm going to go sign Amari, and I'm going to go sign Zeke, and we're going to show up week one, plan on winning the Super Bowl. How does Dak say no? I've talked before about Edelman and Brady. When you win championships, especially with the Dallas Cowboys, you become a legend. It's not like $85 million is nothing. I get Kirk Cousins makes more per year, but who cares? You can become a much bigger deal in the league than Kirk Cousins and be really rich and get another contract in 4 years. Wanted to get your opinion on the Panthers' outlook this season. What do you think about their past few draft classes and the overall view of NFL's executives about Marty Herney? I've never asked anyone about Marty Herney, but Christian McCaffrey, that's a home run. The kid's an absolute superstar. The wide receiver they drafted last year is really good. I have a couple buddies around the league that are really high on DJ Moore. Then this year, Brian Burns, to land that guy in the late teens, I think that guy's a really good player. I think they've hit back-to-back. Now, we don't know about Burns, but I'm going to assume he was a hit because I like him, and it's my podcast. So, you got some impact players. Now, if Cam can stay healthy and Kuechly can stay on the field, I'm getting a lot of pushback, like, Middlecoff, you're too down on the Panthers, too down on the Panthers. And then I watch All or Nothing, and I love Ron Rivera, and Cam kind of grew on me. I love Luke Kuechly. I love Christian McCaffrey. I like DJ Moore. I'm like, yeah, maybe the team's not going to be as bad as I thought. So I'm a little more bullish on the Panthers than maybe I was a month ago. I would be, I don't know, I can't really tell you much about Marty Herney, but I do like their draft class the last couple years. Is there a difference for the first round bus? I was comparing a Jamarcus Russell to Joey Harrington and David Carr. It seems like players bust for different reasons. Do you see difference and adjust your view to the of the players? Yeah, I would say Jamarcus busted because he was lazy. And a wise coach once told me you can't overcome dumb and lazy in this league. You can overcome lazy if you're really talented. You can overcome dumb if you work really hard. But if you're dumb and you're lazy, you will eventually fail. And Jamarcus did not work hard at all. He was much more talented than the other guys. I was pretty young for Joey Harrington and David Carr. You know, I was like in high school when they got drafted, so it's hard for me to, I'd have to go like study their YouTube pages. You know, Dave just got destroyed by the defensive line. I know a lot of people haven't been at Fresno State that say he was really, really good in college. I think most guys in the first round that fail, it's either because the organization fails them or they're super lazy and they don't try. Or they don't love football. And I think when you found out, when you hear about Joey Harrington, the not loving football was a big something interwoven into the way people described him. Gambling question from a stat metric. What do you think is the best to focus on? I've been looking at scoring defense, turnover ratio, yards per play, and third down conversion offense defense. Maybe the reason I'm such a shitty gambler is because I'm a gut feel guy. I don't know. I'm the wrong guy to ask on this. I'm more just, I like this team, and that's why I lose a lot of money. I'm one of the worst gamblers you'll ever see, though I gamble a lot of money. Now, my one strategy, my go-to strategy that tends to work is bet against the masses. So when the masses are betting on one person, I go the other way. When everyone's hanging a left, always hang a right. And you'll win more than usual. Now, that means when everyone's hammering the Patriots or everyone's betting on the Eagles, you got to take the Jags or you got to take the Raiders. But that shit works. Huge Jags fan. What's your take on this season? I think they're good shot at the wild card spot and being a sleeper. You know what's funny is on my other podcast, we got done recording the other day and I'm like, you know what's crazy? Is I basically follow every team in the league on Twitter. And I see videos 24/7 from every team in the league of highlights, of defensive highlights, of press conferences. I swear to God, as I record this right now, I haven't seen one highlight or read one comment on the Jaguars. It's almost like on my Twitter feed, they do not exist. Now, my guy Flip is there as the offensive coordinator. He's a big Foles guy. Their defense has a lot of talent. If Leonard Fournette can kind of get his career back going. Marquise Lee comes back from injury. Yeah, I think they could be a really competitive team for sure. Forgot to mention this take is predicated on Golden Tate missing the first four games with suspension. Something erased. Whatever your comment was before, it erased, or I would have read your question. What is the Chiefs' ceiling? I feel like if Mahomes is still a god and the defense can create pressure, the turnovers, they'd go 15-1 or 16-0. Their offense should be elite. So I don't think their offense should come back to earth at all if everyone can stay healthy. I don't see how their defense doesn't improve. Frank Clark is better than Dee Ford. They still got Chris Jones. They're running a 4-3 defense now. They add the Honey Badger, which should only help just the defensive backs and the communication. There's no way their defense can be as bad as it was last year in terms of coverage. And if their defensive line, they actually might not get the same amount of sacks. Last year, I think they had 52. Let's say they get in the mid-40s. But I think their overall defense can be better. Their red zone defense can be better. It's really hard in the NFL to go 15-1, but if there was one team in the NFL, if you're like, Middlecoff, what's the one team in the NFL that go 15-1, it would probably be them. Yeah, so I would agree there. Raiders fan. Derek Carr's contract 2020 not fully guaranteed. Two first-round picks. Think they go after Clemson quarterback if he comes out? He's only a sophomore, so no. But one story today was that Derek Carr bought a house right next to John Gruden in Las Vegas. My response was bold move, Cotton. If they have a bad season, they get out of his contract for basically no dead money. It's risky. Now, it's never risky to invest in real estate, and when you have as much money as Derek, you can buy houses if you want to buy houses. But for him to be on the Raiders when they move to Las Vegas, he has to play better. Because if he plays like he did in 2019, he will not be on the team. Outside-the-box question for the mailbag. Why wasn't Tedford a candidate for the Packers job? He worked with Rodgers at Cal and has been great with quarterbacks. He's also done a good job at Fresno State the last couple years. One thing I had heard, Tedford's had a lot of health problems. He's in his 60s. He's just going to retire at Fresno State. I think his ambition days of like, he should have got the USC job, the Packers job, those days are kind of over. Because he's kicked ass at Fresno State. They play USC, I think, week one. I think they beat him. I think Tedford is just a dramatically better coach than Clay Helton. So I think a lot of it is more based on him just being old. Okay, that's going to do it for the Middlecoff mailbag. If I didn't answer your question, I'll eventually get to it. Either direct message you or I'll read it on the next podcast. 7-0 Denver right now. I'm going to go eat dinner. God, the Hall of Fame game, I tweeted this earlier, is much better in theory than it is in reality. We're all like, oh, we got football back! And then about two snaps in, you realize you're watching Matt Schaub throw picks. You're like, this sucks. You know, is something on Netflix? Because I'm not watching this. Flacco didn't play. Drew Lock looks terrible. When I say Drew Lock looks terrible, I've peeked up and watched him throw about two passes. But the Hall of Fame game, one of those games, better in theory than it actually is in reality. Keep hitting me up, Middlecoff Mailbag, at John Middlecoff, Instagram handle. Same thing as my Twitter handle. Talk to y'all later. Enjoy the weekend. Peace!